First, protests following the death of George Floyd have put the issues of racism, racial inequality, and the use of force by police squarely in the spotlight. Many are wondering, after years of activism around these issues, if this is some kind of tipping point for new reforms. Incidents of vandalism and violence have also gotten a lot of discussion, with some saying it's alerting people to the anger at the root of the situation, others saying it derails the core message of the protests. For social movements of the past that did lead to changes in policy, rioting has often occurred alongside a range of peaceful action. Peter Hart Brinson is an associate professor of sociology and communication and journalism at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. He's authored the book, The Gay Marriage Generation, How the LGBT Movement Transformed American Culture. Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a historic time. I think a moment people are going to be talking about for years to come. As someone who studies social movements, what stands out to you about the days since George Floyd's death?
As awful as George Floyd's death was, in some ways it was entirely predictable. Whenever we see violent protests erupt like we saw in the Twin Cities last week, it comes on after repeated failures of nonviolent protests to make a headway in solving a problem. People only resort to violent protest when all other options have been failed. And so the fact that we have seen at least 8 years of killings of unarmed African Americans at the hands of police officers, sometimes at the hands of ordinary civilians like Trayvon Martin back in 2012, without seeing visible progress, it's understandable that we would see these outbursts of anger and rage.
Do those outbursts, though, as some people say, detract from the message, the actual hopes for change that people have?
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. People who study social movements haven't been able to demonstrate a clear link between violent protest and any particular kind of outcome. You know, sometimes it appears to help a movement, and sometimes it appears to hurt a movement. It is certainly the case that media coverage of violent protests tend to emphasize the destruction rather than the underlying cause. So as bad, and we have to remember as media consumers, that as bad and as horrific as the images of burning buildings may be, it's an even more horrifying crime that caused this outburst in the first place. We need to imagine the horror of a life taken, or in this, you know, in reality, dozens of lives taken without justice.
Former President Barack Obama held a virtual town hall yesterday where he talked about the news of the last week. Here's some of what he had to say about the protests.
This country was founded on protests. It is called the American Revolution. And every step of progress in this country, every expansion of freedom, every expression of our deepest ideals has been won through efforts that made the status quo uncomfortable. And we should all be thankful for folks who are willing in a peaceful, disciplined way to be out there making a difference.
Can you talk about that idea that no changes just sort of happened by themselves?
There's an old saying that power concedes nothing without a demand. In this case, the demand that we're seeing is particularly loud and particularly upfront. I think President Obama is right that you know, the protest is essential to the founding of our nation. The Boston Tea Party is one example of violent protest, property destruction that was important to the birth of freedom. I think people of color around the United States are asking for something very similar now: the guarantees of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
We're talking to Peter Hart Brinson from UW-Eau Claire. He's a sociologist there who studies social movements, talking about one that is going on right now after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. So there have been comparisons to this moment and 1968 in particular, after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Just over a week after his death, President Lyndon Johnson signed a new Civil Rights Act, which included fair housing legislation, among many other things. I want to give a listen now to then-President Lyndon Johnson talking about it.
We all know that the roots of injustice run deep. But violence cannot redress a solitary wrong or remedy a single unfairness. And we just must put our shoulders together and put a stop to both. The time is here. Action must be now.
So that Civil Rights Act also had an anti-rioting act attached to it. How easy is it to try to tackle both sides of this at once? The changes that protesters say are needed, but trying to prevent the destruction related to looting?
It's a question of political will. There's no question that we can do this. The question is do people want to do it? We are very politically divided in our country right now, along the lines of race, more so than we've seen in many decades, I think. And so because racial conflict has now become one part of the escalating war between left and right, Republican and Democrat, there's a fair amount of reluctance, I think, on some parties to actually try to seek a meaningful solution. We can do it, but do we want to do it? That's the hard question that we have to ask ourselves.
A lot of people refer to Martin Luther King Jr. these days in this time of protest and look back. And sometimes I think people give the impression that, hey, there was a civil rights leader who almost all of us united around, except for the really bad guys who were fighting back. But then surveys at the time showed sometimes he was rated as one of the most hated people in America. Can you talk about how, in hindsight, we kind of sanitize what was going on with past social movements?
Yes, that's an excellent point. I mean, we romanticize the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s above all, to the point where we have to slow ourselves down and think about how long it took for even the modest changes that movement achieved to bear fruit. Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968, which is about 15 years after Brown versus Board of Education declared segregation separate but equal to be unconstitutional. So that's a decade and a half of resistance to integration and to equality. And it ultimately led to Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. So fast forward to 2020, we have seen 8 years of nonviolent protest surrounding the Black Lives Matter movement with very little progress. And without even the same measure of progress that we saw in the 1960s, we yet again see anger and frustration boiling over. Politics is never pretty, and we need to remember that was true with the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s as well.
We're talking to Peter Hart Brinson, Associate Professor of Sociology and Communication and Journalism at UW-Eau Claire, looking at protest movements and how they can lead to social change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that the demonstrations in the wake of George Floyd's death are going to lead into new policies, new laws, new guidelines that might reform policing or address racial inequality? If so, what kind of changes do you think are likely? Are there changes you want to see yourself? What effect do you think that the looting and vandalism that's happened after many of these protests is having on the movement overall and how it's seen? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. There's more to come here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Peter Hart Brinson, Associate Professor of Sociology and Communication and Journalism at UW-Eau Claire, looking at the potential for real changes to come out of the protests around the country over the last week. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think this is a tipping point for reforms in policing or action on racial inequality? If so, are there changes you'd like to see at local, state, or national levels? Do you think that vandalism or looting that's happened alongside the protests is affecting, detracting from the core message of the movement? If you've been a part of protests over issues in the past or over the past week, what do you see working? What do you see not working? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. We've got Jeremy with us in Milwaukee. Jeremy, hello.
Yeah, I guess my question is, how do we get to quantifiable facts and figures on how to handle this? You know, obviously racism is a huge issue. It exists. What is it that we can do? I feel like we see the castle in the foreground. We don't have the path to get there. What are things that we can do in our everyday lives to help this change?
Jeremy, thanks for the call. Yeah, how do we get, Peter, from the step of protest today to what Jeremy says is something off in the distance? What steps have to happen between the protests and the results?
Jeremy's question, I think, is the million-dollar question. What do we do? How do we prevent this from happening again? The truth is there are a number of different ways that people can proceed. Short-term solutions lie in the hands of local police departments and local municipalities. We can implement more implicit bias trainings for police departments, which have been shown to be at least somewhat effective at reducing violence by law enforcement. In terms of long-term solutions, those are larger political policy questions, and they get at the larger problems associated with voting, who votes, who exercises their voice in the political sphere. In terms of our everyday lives, all white Americans, as a white American, I will speak as one, we white Americans have the ability to check our implicit biases that we may harbor against people of color. And being aware of implicit biases that we have is the first step to counteracting them. So we don't have to act on implicit biases that we may have. And showing greater empathy and being sure that we treat people of color equally to other white people is something that all white Americans can do in their daily lives.
Thanks for that call, Jeremy, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to another caller now. Patrick is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Patrick, hi.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Yeah, I just have a comment. My concern being that not so confident that things are going to change with politics. I'm not seeing a lot of actual action.
I think we lost Patrick there, but I think we got the point, though. Peter, he says he doesn't necessarily trust politicians to take action and actually make changes.
I share Patrick's sentiment. It's a sad state of affairs that I think Americans have sort of lost faith in our elected officials to come together and find common ground. And as Jeremy mentioned, you know, we need to look at the facts. There are lots of facts out there. Some point towards persistent problems with discrimination. Others point to the real difficulties real obstacles to finding enduring solutions. At bare minimum, we need our elected officials on both sides of the aisle to put aside their partisan differences, stop trying to score points against one another, and at least agree on a common set of facts so that we can try to find solutions that will work.
Thanks a lot for that call. Patrick, we'll go to David on the line now in Raymond. David, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call. I think that for a lot of the questions, there are no answers right now, certainly nothing that is obvious that can be applied at a national level. Two things stand out to me. One is Obama's approach on his town hall was to get the mayors together. They control the police departments and all this kind of thing. So it will be very interesting in 90 days to see what mayors have signed up for his program. I'm not sure what he calls it exactly. I have a feeling that is and will become an actual avenue that mayors can rely on to come up with policy ideas and that kind of thing, practical things where people are safe, injustices are addressed. So I think that's an avenue, and it'll be very interesting to me to see how that plays out.
David, thanks a lot for the call. So, Peter, not necessarily waiting for Congress to do something nationwide, but David's saying it could happen at the local level, at the city level.
David's point is so important. All politics is local, and all of us can exert the most change in our own social circles at the local level. Now's a time when we can see local leaders step up, and you don't have to be a mayor, and you don't have to be a leader of a law enforcement division to exercise leadership in your community. Even in small town Wisconsin, change from the bottom up is the hardest form of change to mandate, but it's the most enduring form of change in terms of actually changing the culture and practices of people in a place. So I would certainly encourage all listeners to think about how they can make a difference at their local level and keep an eye out for what local leaders are doing, even in communities where that haven't experienced violence. Keep an eye out for local leaders stepping up and trying to make improvements.
We are talking to Peter Hart Brinson from UW-Eau Claire, sociologist there, looking at what happens in social movements and what leads to changes in laws or policies or rules to address the issues raised by protesters. Back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Wauwatosa. Michael, hello.
Hello. I would like you and your guests to bring up to discuss the issue of qualified immunity. I don't think a lot of people realize that police officers and other governmental employees, such as correctional guards and so forth, are under this umbrella of immunity that they, I think, pretty much know that they can get away with very egregious acts because they're under qualified immunity. So could you address that issue?
Michael, thanks for the call. I know some people have been raising that issue in, over the last week in particular, Peter. Is that the kind of concrete change that people might be working toward?
I think that is a concrete change that will be on the table for discussion. Now, I will confess to not really being an expert about the legal angles here, but it is certainly the case that that police officers have special protections when it comes to the use of force. And in some ways, there's good reasons for that. What we need to be aware of and what we need to be worried about is the potential for abuse there. I think that's what Michael was saying. The research shows that police officers disproportionately use force against African Americans. And that's especially true when the victims are unarmed. So here we do see a tremendous potential for abuse. That disparity can be eliminated and still maintain the special protections that police officers have regarding the use of force.
Thanks a lot for the call. Peter, before we run out of time, I know you've covered LGBT issues over the years, including in your book. And I know some activists have pointed toward the Stonewall riots of, what is it now, 50-ish years ago, as a turning point in that. Can you talk about that and how it might relate to the current moment?
There is certainly a potential parallel that we can see if we think about the Stonewall Rebellion of 1969. What distinguished the Stonewall Rebellion was nothing about the characteristics of the event itself. It was what activists did afterwards that made the Stonewall Rebellion a turning point. Lesbians and gays had experienced police raids and violence at the hands of police officers for years in cities all across the United States. And the police raid of the Stonewall Inn in New York City was no different from the dozens and dozens of such police raids that happened before. What made it different was what people did afterwards. The same thing could be here. As shocking as the details of Floyd's murder were, in some ways, it's no different from many of the other similar events. So whether or not this is a turning point depends on what people do now.
In our last couple of minutes, Peter, you know, there are a lot of different protesters out there. Some of them might want different policy outcomes here, small, big, in between. They might be mutually contradictory in some cases. And this isn't, you know, one movement led by one leadership group. Does that make it challenging to turn a protest into concrete change?
Of course it does. But that's democracy. Democracy has always worked that way and, of course, not worked that way. This is why it's so essential for ordinary citizens to exercise their right to vote, to contact their legislators, and to engage in other forms of political action. People need to build support, to work to build support for the reforms that they believe are needed. And it's only through constant work that one of those policy solutions ultimately emerges.
briefly, as we wrap up, I mean, we've seen former presidents, Republican and Democratic, speaking up on a need for change, retired generals, current heads of NCOs of the Air Force and the U.S. Army saying we need to talk about these issues. When people like that are talking about this, is that a success for a protest movement?
It depends on who you ask. There are many different ways to measure success, and people who study social movements can't agree themselves on what counts as a success. I'm going to leave that one open-ended and let people come to their own conclusion.
And we'll leave it there, Peter. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've been talking to Peter Hart Brinson. He's an associate professor of sociology and communication and journalism at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. He's also author of the book, The Gay Marriage Generation. He focuses on social movements, and he joined us today to look at the protests of the past and the protests of the last week and what happens to make social movements turn into policies, rules, and regulations that address the issues raised in those protests. We're all out of time for your calls, but you can keep letting us know what you think. What are you hoping, if anything, comes out of these protest movements? What do you think they would have to do to be successful? Do you worry that acts of looting, say, or vandalism that happen alongside these movements will detract from the message of the protesters? Let us know what you think. You can always email us, ideas@WPR.org. Again, that's our email, ideas@WPR.org. Or you can comment on Twitter. We are @CentralTimeWPR, @CentralTimeWPR, and follow the latest news on the Ideas Network Facebook page.